to the Able Voice Podcast, where your voice is more than a melody, planting seeds in the growing field of clinical music therapy. It's the Able Voice Podcast with Haley and Kim.
Welcome. Welcome to another Able Voice podcast debrief. Today we are gonna get real.
First things first, I'm the realist.
I think these are some of my favorite conversations we've had to date. And this real talk kind of series, I think, will continue across seasons because I think it's so important and valuable that we sit and check in with one another about just the ebbs and flows of being a music therapist, because it's not the cookie cutter experience that we always see plastered all over the place. And in terms of those miracle moments, as we mentioned in the episode with our Synergy team. But then we also first had the opportunity to sit down and chat with Sarah Bell and Kim Best, who are incredible clinicians, but just incredible people in their own right. And lovely, lovely, lovely to always connect with. So Kim, I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about all of our real talk conversations today.
Always. Well, firstly, I just want to say how grateful I am to have been able to have these conversations, and I very much look forward to continuing them. But, you know, for our team and for Sarah and Kim to be able to come together and to come to this space and be brave enough to have these conversations and be vulnerable with us and just kind of, well, to be real, just to put it all out there and say, yeah, there are some great things happening, but here are the gaps, here are the strains. I think everyone, there were definitely overlaps in some of the things that were mentioned, which I'm certain we'll get into, but it was also really fascinating to see those unique experiences, right? And what's putting strain on someone else is maybe something that someone else either enjoyed that part of the work or didn't experience it quite the same way. And that was just a good reminder for me of like, yeah, there's lots of gaps. And I think there are certain hot topics that we all agree with, you know, like the basics of the fact that we have a lot of work to do in terms of recognition and stability and all of those big pieces, but also a reminder that, you know, there's lots of different ways to interact with our profession. And I think we see that a lot in the way that Sarah and the way that Kim have set up their practices, and even within our team, you know, how people are choosing to engage with music therapy in terms of, okay, this is my caseload, or these are the other things that I do to fill my cup. One that shows resilience and that shows the adaptability of all of us to be able to find those outlets. But two, it's a grounding reminder for me that, yeah, it's fine if I don't like all of it. Someone else might come in and do these pieces. I think for me, the main thing that I loved or take away from both of these conversations is just that we need to be having them more, because I felt this collective sigh of relief. There was like, I mean, I feel like there's a little bit of tension at the beginning whenever you're about to say something that may feel controversial, but there's this sigh of relief of, cool, I'm in this space where I'm not the only one thinking this and where we need to say it, because if we don't, never going to change. We're never going to be able to work towards shrinking those gaps or finding additional resources. So
yeah,
I'm just feel filled with a lot of gratitude to be able to be in that space.
Same. And I think that once we realize that we're not the only one experiencing something, that it makes it easier to live in that truth. Like, yeah, okay, I'm not the only one. I don't have to feel awkward about experiencing this. I don't have to feel I'm an anomaly. This is happening. So what do we need to do in order to fix it? Now I have my people who are also feeling the same thing. Yeah. You have this shared experience. Let's band together and do something about it. That's what I think I love most, is connecting people and realizing that we're not alone in these experiences. And so I'm going to ask the same questions to you and to myself that we ask the people on the podcast to answer in these real talks, starting off with the high notes of practicing and the things that we love most about the music therapy profession.
A great place to start. There's so much that I do love about the field. And I think for me, a lot of it does come from, you know, being an actual connection and in community with the people that I'm working with, and the great honor to witness what people are bringing with them to therapy. So to just witness them in their truth and to be able to be a partner along their wellness journey, that gives me so much light and honor and gratitude. And it's a big part of what keeps me going and seeing those, you know, I think as we've said, as it's been called, those miracle moments, but also just those, like, the small wins. I'm a big fan of the small wins, even I think maybe more than the quote unquote miracle moments. I really, really love those moments where with someone where a small step has been taken and they don't realize it at first. And then you shout it out and celebrate it. And they're like, oh, wow, I didn't notice this. So I think the work with people is a big highlight of the profession. And then I think another big piece of the music therapy profession that I love is just, I mean, the outlet of the fact, like, we all know how beneficial music is. And so as much as this is a part of the challenge, which we'll get into in the next question, but just being able to use music and all that we know about it in such a productive and holistic fashion. And then the people that attracts to the field, like, music therapists are some of the coolest people I know, just in the way that they think and the way that they interact with people. And so I love when I can be in that space with other music therapists with shared visions, but also the fact that, yeah, cool, this is another outlet for people, but there's so many ways in which we can approach that. So I really like that I can have the stability of knowing what my profession is and knowing how to do the work, but also knowing that I've got, you know, a limitless toolkit and approach that can kind of match up with the person that I'm working with, because it'll never be the same combination. It's kind of like an equation. If we're going back to some of the stats talks that we had with JD earlier, of like, how do we fit this puzzle and how do we know, take what we know? What about you? What do you love most?
Two big things are coming to mind. The first is that I love that this work is not about me.
Yeah, nice.
I think that, well, a lot of it is like in self-reflection. I do find things about myself that can grow, like on a personal level. And in terms of my work professionally, like, there's always professional development to happen. But I love that the work itself is not about me. And the use of music as a tool is not, it doesn't revolve around my ability to perform, if that makes sense. So I think growing up, I had this relationship with music. I knew I loved music. I knew I had a talent for music. And when you grow up with some sort of musical skill, you're always hearing, oh my gosh, you're so good. Oh my gosh, you do this so well. You should do all of these exams. And then there's the proficiencies and you have to meet all of these standards and criteria. And then, oh, you should perform. And I'm actually a really anxious person. Like, I have so much performance anxiety when it comes to being on a stage, and throughout school, even I hated the spotlight being on me in terms of my musical ability and the pressure of my musical ability being the end all and be all to that expression of creativity. I did not love that. It's why I didn't go into performance. I'm good at it, but I didn't love it. I didn't, it was too much for me and it didn't feel worth it enough. And for me, finding music therapy was worth it because it made sense for me. I wanted to still do music and I wanted to still be creative, but the spotlight was no longer on me. It was about how can I use these skills and abilities to help somebody else. And I think that's what I love most about this profession. How do we support other people using these skills and talents that we have and the toolbox that we build for ourselves? And then the second big thing that I love about the profession is that it doesn't look the same for everyone. There's so much room to mold it into what you want, like your Build-A-Bear experience. Like you can make it into whatever you want. And I never saw myself working a 9-to-5, but I could, if I wanted to, I could work a 9-to-5 as a music therapist. I could work one day a week if I wanted to as a music therapist. Like I could do workshops and talks about how to do music therapy. I could teach if I wanted to teach. Like there are so many things that we can do within this profession, and it doesn't look the same. So I love that no matter what iteration I am going through in my life, I think there is still something that I can do within this profession that will still speak to why I love it and still carry on the work in the most authentic way for me in that season. And I love that this profession has that flexibility.
I really love that, the Build-A-Bear experience. It's so true though. Because like you said, you can create your clinical caseload that you want, but there's also all these different aspects of the field that we need people creating resources, or we need people doing those workshops. And it really does give that piece of freedom to know that, you know, you don't have to be a 9-to-5 or a 7-to-3 or whatever, but you can be. The more that we have these conversations, the more excited I get, because the more that it highlights, oh, I didn't know that that was a part of our field or that I could do that. Within all of that, though, you know, it's a balance. There are things that I know that you and I have talked about as struggles in the field, as struggles even with finding that approach of knowing that it's okay not to be working 40 hours of direct client work a week and learning those things. And so for you, Haley, what have been some of those greatest challenges working as a music therapist to date? What have you identified as the biggest challenges or struggles?
There are a couple. Although there's so much I love about the profession, there's so much that I've, like you said, there's a balance I've had to learn that are not so great for me, and how building up ways to deal with those things. So one, I think, was the experience of loss. Like in my life, I haven't had to experience loss and death in such like a personal way, except for a couple of instances. In my work in long-term care and dementia care, I was thrown into this world where that became a norm within the work, is supporting people in palliative care, helping to support families through their grief, and finding ways to not get overwhelmed by all of those hard feelings, by all of the ended connections as a result of somebody passing away that you build within your relationship with that person and with that family. And so I've had to try and find ways to protect myself and to find people that get it, that I can like leave a hard palliative care session and just cry with, that I can find a space that I can just sit in silence and just be reflective of all of the moments that were pure and were very real and remain real for many of the relationships that I've built within this profession. So that's one. Trying to cope with loss and figuring out a way to make that manageable and sustainable for my working life. I think the second would be more on the logistical, like administrative side of things, and noticing that I don't love the way that a lot of music therapy practices are set up in today's age. I think that for our generation of music therapists, we need more than just a get to work kind of mentality. I think when I find people that value self-care, that value professional development, that value your boundaries, and that want to learn about your values as a person, not just as an employee, as a contractor, but really want you to succeed in order for the practice to succeed, because without healthy, thriving clinicians, everything's just going to go to shit. Excuse my French, but it just is the way it is. And I find that, you know, what I don't love about the profession is seeing all of these very talented people, very, very talented people, from people that are were in my cohort in school, to interns, to other people that I've just come to know within the music therapy world, to see them, one, not continue with the profession and to leave and do something else because of the burnout that they've experienced as a result of their working experience. It really makes me sad to know that we're not creating a sustainable environment for the music therapists that are doing great work. And so that is a big challenge for me right now, and something that I know we've been brainstorming in Synergy Music Therapy on how do we do it differently, because if we keep doing it this way, it's just not going to work. It's not going to be sustainable, and we're not going to have the growth that we want to see in this profession if we keep burning people out. So yeah, those are some of the greatest challenges for me to date. I wonder if you resonate with any of that, or if you have things that you consider to be challenges of working as a music therapist.
Yeah, I absolutely do resonate with that, Haley. I share your sadness of that last piece, and it absolutely breaks my heart when I hear of someone who's, you know, really struggling or not able to stay in the profession, or chooses to leave, whether it be because of burnout, or whether it be because of financial, or whether it be because there's just quote unquote not enough work. All of those factors show me that we have a lot of work to do as a field, because we're not in a place where it is, like you said, sustainable for people to be able to come and learn and grow and thrive. So that one really sits with me and is sitting with me a lot right now, because I've had some recent conversations about the basically dropout rates of music therapists and people leaving the profession. And I see that as a big challenge, not only because, yeah, that stings for the people who are spending the time to come in, get this education and to learn to become a music therapist and develop those skills, which is not cheap and not as accessible as I think it needs to be, which is a whole other challenge, I think. But also to know that then so fewer people have access to music therapists, because there's not a lot of us. And I see a lot of these challenges as cyclical and connected, which is, you know, again, why I'm grateful to have these chats to be able to highlight them, because I don't think they're isolated. So for me, yeah, that really resonates with me. But I think here, some of the things that I see as contributing to that from my lens of experience, I guess, are firstly the isolation in some instances. When I first came into the field, it was a really rude awakening of contrast between what I had experienced in school and what I had experienced coming back to Kingston with, well, two therapists, yourself and myself, physically here, practicing at least. You know, when you go from a two-year master's program where you have 10 people in your class that you are seeing every single day and likely in the nights almost 24/7, because we get really close, and you have that whole support system, you know, those people who are there for you when you're experiencing challenging things during internship. And for me, when I was working in the correctional facility and I didn't have a lot of direct supervision, and so I leaned on these people to process the things I was hearing, and same that concept of loss. I only got a little bit of a sense of in internship, but I had those supports to be able to kind of process. And so then I moved back to Kingston and found myself in a great place that like fell into some work and was back home and feeling comforted, and just felt so disconnected. Like, still kept in touch with some of my music therapy cohort, but you know, not everyone was practicing. Not everyone went on to pursue music therapy. People were working different hours, people were working different populations, and it was hard to find that connection. And I think that really contributed to some of the overwhelm that I was feeling, and just, you know, forcing me to look at how I can find connections outside of that. Because when you're not in a hub, where there's 5, 10 plus music therapists, you don't get to have those conversations that you're used to having every day in school. And these kinds of conversations too, which I've learned about myself, I really crave being able to just have like deep chats about the profession in different facets. So that was a challenge. And then I think another big one that I've struggled with is the expectations. Well, kind of similar to what you were saying of, you know, I'm grateful when I am able to connect with people who share my values and share my passion and commitment towards life work harmony. Because it's not something that, I mean, it's something I've had to develop over the past 5 years. And I think a lot of what I came into the field seeing and what I still see is this like really confusing conflict between we need to take care of ourselves and self-care and set boundaries and do the thing. And people then telling me that they see 10 clients a day. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Or working on weekends or doing whatever, which no judgment because people's own life work harmony is their own. And some people have a bigger capacity, but it just wasn't aligning with mine. And that caused a lot of, or still causes, you know, confusion with, okay, what is quote a music therapist? If I'm only doing one client a day, or if I am only doing one day of clinical work or however many, what does that say about me? And is that okay? Which yes, 100% it is. So if you're that person, yeah, definitely. It's totally fine and totally valid. But I struggled with that because I just wasn't seeing a lot of people who had the same external passions as I did until perhaps now when I'm starting to seek that out. But in alignment with that, what I find challenging is this pattern that I see of there being so much work out there. And so many people who could benefit from services to the point where we are in a mental health crisis. We have wait lists. We have so much going on. And so I see that. And I personally struggle with that, feeling guilty and wanting to, you know, fill my caseload, but knowing I need to balance. Seeing that, and then also sometimes seeing a little bit of disconnect between organizations or between therapists and having more of that business mindset, which is valid, but also knowing that, you know, people are going without care. And I see this, unfortunately, in non-music therapy settings as well, of these are our clients and we have a wait list of 3 months, and knowing that there are other clinicians out there who just can provide services. But it's a balance between how do we operate as a business and how do we make sure that we're serving our communities. And I think that pulls at my heartstrings a little bit because I feel that as someone who is a deep empath and wants to take every single person on and wants to make sure everyone has care. But yeah, I think those are my main challenges are, you know, the demand on us within a profession that isn't yet in a place of sustainability to make sure that we can continue to support that demand. I feel like I kind of start to ramble whenever I talk about these things because they're so interconnected for me personally.
Yeah. And I think there's so many ways that you can interpret that because when you say demand, my head just went into a million different directions. So I can imagine what it is to like pare it down concisely. But there's so much demand on us as therapists. There's so much demand on, you know, the spaces that we hold and we operate out of, but also demands to our self-care. There's demands to our ability to support ourselves financially. There's demands to be successful even in whatever way that looks like for you. Right. And I think that is where values can sometimes clash in this world of empaths. I think anybody who comes into the profession of music therapy is an empath to some degree because we have to somehow connect with the people that we're working with. And so when it sometimes becomes difficult when the lines are blurred working with our colleagues, with people that are also in the profession. And I think there's a bit of a competitive space across the profession. And it doesn't need to be as cutthroat, I think, as a lot of people might feel that it is. There's space for all of us. Like you said, we're in a mental health crisis. So like, caring for ourselves, I think, is priority number one. Because we have to still care for other people, and realizing that, recognizing that that's an important thing, so that we are not lashing out and making decisions out of fear, or really, you know, doing more harm, I think, to the profession than good, because we want to be good advocates for the profession, and we want to make sure that anybody that we're supporting, whether it be people that are working for us or people that are working next to us and with us, people that are a part of our caseload clinically that we're supporting through therapy, we want to make sure that all of those people are receiving the best version of us that we can possibly give to them. And I think that's true no matter what, if we were in a mental health crisis within the world or not. But it's just challenging when you have all of these demands and have to think about all these factors. Whereas I think of like a business person who's in the corporate world, like they get to have some degree of separation between, I can be a suit in this space, and XYZ is meant to happen. If I need to come down hard on this person, that's the environment to do it. Now, I think a lot of corporate businesses have implemented some kind of human resources initiatives within those spaces, which are really great. But it's not out of the norm to just be like in that competitive space. It's all about numbers. It's all about, you know, meeting quota. It's all about those kinds of things, whereas we're dealing with real people holding real experiences that is more than just the numbers. It's more than meeting a quota. It's more than that, but we still have to, you know, survive. We have to meet our own financial goals in terms of being able to put food in our bellies and feed our families, even put a roof over our head and care for ourselves in that way. So it's still something that's a work in progress for sure. And I think something that we'll see develop over time. And my hope is that we start to see more people valuing that holistic view of business practice within this field, because it is a different line of work than your traditional business venture. And so some of the models are not going to work the same. Like it's going to take a different approach, I think. That's what I think. And I'm hoping that we start to see less of this burnout in younger clinicians, especially, because it would be such a shame to lose people that are incredibly talented, incredibly caring. We want to see them succeed in this profession. And I think that's a goal for us, is to hopefully have more of these real talk conversations that can help to support somebody's journey and help them to feel like they're not alone, as we said in the beginning. I know this is a little bit longer of a debrief than we usually would do, but we didn't get to have this real talk just on our own. And I wonder if there's something you wish you knew about the profession before you started practicing. If there's like a rapid fire, something that comes to mind about something you wish you knew before you started practicing.
I think there's a lot of things, and so some will go unsaid, and I think a lot of people covered some of them in the other episodes too. But for me, I wish I knew earlier on that there were more of a build-a-bear experience, more of a choose your own adventure, that it wasn't either you find a job or you're 9-to-5, whatever that is. I wish I had a bit more business skills, knowing that I was going back to a place that didn't really have a lot of music therapy. I wish I had just more honest expectations of what music therapy looks like when you're actually in it, specifically with like closure. that's a big one for me. So then there's lots more, but I think those were the three that I really felt coming into the practice. What about you?
I wish I knew that miracle moments don't happen in every session. I think I based my whole perspective as a student on my success as a music therapist based on those miracle moments, and that's just false. I also wish that I knew that my value as a person was just important as my value as a practitioner. And the amount of work that I do does not equate to how good I am as a practitioner. If I had understood understood that at the beginning. I think a lot of my experiences with working in unemployment beforehand also really informed this perspective of coming into the working field and the workforce. But if I had understood this earlier, I think that would have been a really great thing for me to know ahead of beginning this beautiful adventure. But I think it's important to highlight that your value as a practitioner it's not defined by how much you're doing, how much hours and how many people you see, how many sessions you have, how much you're outputting. It's not determined. That doesn't determine how good of a clinician you are. And the expectations that other people put on you, it's okay to say no to those if it doesn't align.
Yes, I am snagging your answer with pride and adding it to mine, because that is something that everyone needs to know, all of that, and especially saying no, because it's so tricky. Although I feel like I knew a little bit of the no, like say no, but I think exactly what you said of like the rest of that, of the worth and the connection to it. So that you really understand, because it's one thing to say no, and another to understand how hard that can be and how important it is and what kinds of things you can say no to.
Exactly. All these resources out there and books that I've read that are like, don't be afraid to say no. But then you get into the situation and you're like, okay, is this a situation that I can say no to? especially when you're new and starting out, you don't feel like you have that kind of pull or authority to even advocate for yourself in that way. So it can be scary. It can be scary. And like I said, this is a skill and something that I have had to learn. But if I knew it earlier, I think that I would have been in a much healthier place for myself. And I might not have, who knows, because there are so many reasons to be burnt out. But the one big period of burnout that I have experienced so far, I think that it might have been less, maybe.
I love that uncertainty, because you're right. There's so many factors that can contribute to it, but I do think that that's a huge factor that, you know, is worth speaking into the universe, because I think there are lots of people that have a similar experience with that. We'll call it a misunderstanding, for lack of a better term, or a gap in the field. So much. So obviously these kinds of conversations are so important. And I'm so glad that we can, you and I, sit down and have a chance to have our real talk as well. And you mentioned a little bit some of your hopes, but with all of this in mind and what we've talked about today, and even I guess with what we've heard from other people too, but for our own personal experiences, Haley, what are your hopes for the future of music therapy?
I hope that in a world of division, we come together and unify as a profession, because it would be easy to mimic what's happening externally in our world. And I want to see us come together celebrating diversity, but at the same time, being a really unified front in how we're showing up for people and how we are showing up for one another in the profession. So that's a big hope that I have for us. I also hope that more people will be excited about the field of music therapy, whether it's somebody who's looking to become a music therapist or people that are willing to advocate for music therapy and be allies of the music therapy field, people that are looking to fund music therapy services and have it within their facilities and in their spaces and really want to utilize music therapy as a standard practice of care. Like, that is my hope, that music therapy becomes just standard practice of care.
Yep, those are great hopes. Those are great hopes, Haley. I have many hopes as well, but I think at the forefront, some similarity of, I want it to be a household name as well. I want music therapy to be something that people know from the outset of when they're seeking treatment, that it's an option for them, as opposed to something that they maybe find out about later on or through the process. I want it to be something from the outset that people know they have access to, and that financially they have access to as well. I know that there's a lot of great work being done in the field, working with insurance companies and, you know, working with within the psychotherapy field about getting some of those HST things dropped. And we have a long way to go, but that's my hope, that people can access it. Beyond that, I really hope that these conversations within the field can continue outside of our podcast, outside of the conversations that we've had, and that we as a profession can listen deeply to these gaps and to not meet them with defensiveness, but to meet them with an understanding that it is a growing field and that the experiences across generations and across everyone who's in the field currently are all valid. And I hope that we can listen so, so deeply to that and work towards a sustainable field so that when these people are coming and when we are a household name and when people can access us, that we are able to provide strong, compassionate, high quality care and also be able to survive and thrive as clinicians.
Thank you for listening to the Able Voice podcast. If you want to hear more episodes like this, subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at Synergy Music Therapy.
You can also find links to our most recent and top-rated episodes on our website at www.synergymusictherapy.com.